Six of the candidates for the Charlottesville School Board spoke at a forum at Charlottesville High School on Monday night. They answered questions about their ideals, the school budget, the focus on standardized assessments, and making school exciting for both students and teachers. The questions were posed by Charlottesville High School seniors and organized and moderated by CHS government teacher Jim Daly.
The first question is, who are you and why do you want to serve on the school board? So if you want to maybe take 2 minutes each and we'll go around, if that's fine, or any order you all wish.
You prefer me to stand or I can project my voice, this is fine, or yeah. I don't know if you can see me back there. Hi, my name is Colette Blount, and I am the mother of a junior here. Jo Blount is my daughter, and I am currently a school teacher. I'm in my 14th year of teaching. I teach 7th grade math. I was the gifted ed specialist at Clark Elementary for 3 years, and before that I was a 7th grade English teacher in math for 6 years, and I taught 4th grade for 4 years. So I have a lot of educational experience, a lot of inside experience that I guess accumulated over the years that really propelled me to then take it one step further and use my expertise towards the good of the Charlottesville City Schools. I love children. I love the educational process, and high school especially is very, very important. You're one step away from emancipation. You all hear and your own goals and things that you want for yourself, and that was a long road coming along the way through elementary school and middle school, and now you're here in high school. And to make that process the strongest and the most positive for all of our students here in the Charlottesville system. And education is the key these days to having a bright future, to having whatever dream you want to accomplish, to having that at your command. So I am running for school board for those reasons, among many others. Thank you for having me tonight.
Would it make sense to come out here?
Do a dance.
Do it. I'm not going to do a dance. We'll do that. I've sat in board meetings in the back there and have had great difficulty hearing. My name is Grant Brownery. I have 3 children in the city, in the school system. 2 here. Carter is in 11th grade. Some of you guys know him, I know. And Taylor's in 9th grade. And Kelsey is at Buford in 7th grade. Now, unlike you, they've had a mix of teachers. Some have been great, and some have been mediocre, and some have been terrible. And luckily, I think the balance is more towards the excellent. And I know you just have excellent teachers now, particularly in social studies, so I know that's not a problem now. But I started off 2 things. One, with 3 children in the system, I felt it was my responsibility to, my choice was either to step up and do something about the schools and see what I could do to help, or sit back and whine because somebody else wasn't doing what I thought they should do. So I thought I should step up. Secondly, I wanted to focus on 2 priorities struck me, and as I indicated earlier, the teachers were very important to me. My experience and my kids' experience have been that teachers are critical. How good the teacher is determines how much you learn, how good the course is, etc., etc. Curriculum is important, obviously, but the teacher can really make something out of nothing. Colette, for instance, is an excellent teacher from what I've heard, and that's what we need. How do we get and keep good teachers? That's number 1 to me. Secondly, how do we make sure the school environment is a safe environment, a very positive environment, to make sure we can learn well in that? But every time I thought about those things, I ran into the budget. Whatever I wanted to do for teachers, to help teachers out, to do more for teachers, to get more teachers, I ran into the problem, it costs money. Well, how do we get more money for the schools? How do we have enough money for the schools? There are only 2 ways to deal with a budget. You increase the revenue and you manage the cost, keep the cost down. And I want to focus on both. My background is a business background. I have my MBA from Columbia. My BA is from Princeton in history, which is not useful for a whole lot, but it's an interesting subject. And what I want to do is try to get more support from the business community, get more revenue from them, more grants and gifts from them, and also more volunteers to teach business skills. All of you all will probably be in some facet of business. I'm a cartoonist, as you might tell by my tie, and that is a business, believe it or not. And so it's important to have some business skills. Number 2, I think we need to manage the costs. Not that they're not being managed well now, but let's make sure they're being managed well, and let's be sure everybody has confidence that they're being managed well. So two things, increase revenue, manage the cost, and that's my focus. It comes from the budget, so therefore we can get and keep good teachers and make sure our schools are safe and positive. Thank you.
Now for the defense.
You can't see me, I'm sorry. My husband tells me all the time I'm really short, and so I wear heels, but that doesn't help. My name's Lizelle Duggar, and I am an assistant public defender here in town. So two reasons why I decided to run. I don't have any kids in the system yet, but I will. Lauren is going to be 5 on Saturday, and so she's going to start kindergarten next year. And then the little one turned 2 recently, and she's going to be starting in 2010. So they're going to come into the pipeline. So that's important to me, that they're going to go to an excellent school, get an excellent education. The second reason I'm running is because of my job as a public defender. What I do is the court appoints us to represent folks who can't afford to hire their own attorney to defend them against criminal charges. Every time a client of mine is found guilty or pleads guilty, we go to sentencing. And each time we have a sentencing hearing, they stand in front of Judge Hogshire or Judge Higgins, and the judge will ask them, state your name, when was your birthday? Third question, how far did you get in school? Do you know most of my clients say 10th grade? And I kept hearing it. For 7.5 years I've been doing this, and I kept hearing 10th grade. What is it about that 9th to 10th grade to 11th grade space that my clients who are born and raised in Charlottesville are not finishing up and getting their diploma? What is it that's not happening in their lives that are clearly happening in your lives? Because you guys are on your way to graduate, probably go to college. So that's the other reason I'm running. My clients who I see day in and day out who haven't gotten the benefit of a good education. And I want to know why, and is there something I can do to help them get that education? I'm not naive enough to think that because they get a high school diploma that they're not going to end up in my office in trouble. But it certainly would help when they're looking for jobs, when they're looking to get into college, and having something to do with their lives and not ending sitting up in my office and then unfortunately in jail or prison. So that's what I'm about. I want to make sure my personal interests, my kids, but 7.5 years of being an assistant public defender, I want to help the folks in our community. Thanks.
I'm going to stand behind the table because I'm a little tired and I'm afraid I'll fall over if I stand in the middle. My name's Kathy Galvin, and I'll start chronologically. I grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts. It's in southeastern Massachusetts and kind of called a working class suburb of Boston. And I went to a high school that was over 6,000 kids. And so there was over 1,000 kids in my graduating class. We had a lot of problems in my high school. Everything from we had very severe race riots when I was a kid, to drug, other kinds of criminal activities. But one thing that kept me focused was I belonged to this program called QUEST. It was the Qualitative Urban Environmental Studies program. It was a small school, in a sense, within a school. And it was multidisciplinary and multi-year. And I believe that class, which taught me how to communicate, research, teach in classrooms. They sent us off into the elementary schools. In fact, that's when I learned that I had a very serious southeastern Massachusetts accent. And the coach gave me elocution lessons, like Pygmalion, to make sure I didn't talk so much like I was from southeastern Massachusetts. And it gave us leadership skills. I bring that up because I think that is why I am an architect and an urban designer today. I had a very long life in between, managing public housing in the meantime, then going and getting my architecture degree at UVA. I married my husband, Michael Costanzo. We've been married 20 years. I have 2 sons, Patrick Costanzo, who's an 11th grader here, and I have a 7th grade son, Kevin. But that grounding I got, and that small school within a school really gave me a lot of insight as to what I needed to be as an adult. And I really believe that we're at a point in this division where we need to think very, very creatively about the high school. Yes, we have a very severe dropout rate, but it's not anything unique to Charlottesville. I think we just heard at a neighborhood association meeting that in Southside, Virginia, there's 70% dropout rate. We're getting 54% of our disadvantaged kids are graduating. We're around 40% dropout rate for certain segments of our population. We must do better. That does mean that perhaps we've got to rethink the structure of some of the way we organize our schools. And I bring up the small schools within the schools because I've been reading quite extensively all over the country. And the idea that the fundamental relationship you want to cultivate is between the student and teacher. And just as Grant said, the teacher is incredibly important. But we need to create the environments that facilitate that bonding and that learning that goes on between that, the adult and the child. And I look forward to the rest of your questions.
My name is Sean McCord, and I'll just stand tall and speak loud. There is a running theme among all of us up here. The reason that we want to serve on the school board, and that reason, really, is you. Okay, maybe not you because you're seniors, but the students and the children of the schools. I have three children in three public schools, Johnson, Walker, and Buford. They happen to be here tonight. One of them will be coming here to CHS next year. My wife is a teacher. I grew up in California. I was in school in the late 60s, the mid 70s. Yes, I'm that old. And it was a great time and a great place to be in school. It was young and exciting, and there was new industry coming in, and it was very forward looking. And that time there, my experience there, reminds me a lot of Charlottesville right now, which is why I'm pleased to be living here now and raising my family here. But in my sophomore year of high school, we had a governor, you may have heard of, his name was Ronald Reagan, and he instituted a series of budget cuts that went statewide, and all sorts of civil services, schools, parks, recreation centers, firehouses were just cut drastically. Now, I had been pretty good in my sophomore year. I had loaded up on all the classes that I needed to take, and I had planned in my junior year to take all the electives that I hadn't had a chance to take before. You know, experiment in drama, some advanced science classes, and they were all cut, all of them. I went in and met with the vice principal a week before school started, and suddenly I had to pick up all these classes that I didn't want to take. Now, over the summer, I had taken, in California, they had a test called the equivalency test. You take this test, and it's like having the equivalent of a high school degree. You just had to be 16 to take it. And it was meant for people who maybe were struggling and you know, they weren't going to make it out of high school. I took it just to see if I could. I had passed the test. All my classes were being cut. So I said, you know what, I don't need to do this. And at 16 years old, I left high school, and I signed up and I at our local community college. And it was one of the smartest decisions I'd ever made at my young age, because my friends who stayed in school, some of whom joined me a year later, but they were going through having to take courses that they didn't want, and having to face these kind of cuts. I don't want that to happen to you. I don't want it to happen to my daughter. Or the other kids in town. Grant has talked about the budget, and I think that's very important. We right now have the biggest budget Charlottesville schools have ever had, but that's not going to last. So I want to start creating relationships with this. You heard of this university we have up the street? It's filled with really smart people who are tops in their field and also really good at raising money. So I want to borrow some of the expertise that they have and try to funnel some of the energy and resources, and yes, funding into the schools to make this Charlottesville school system be worthy of the University of Virginia. Second of all, I want to help the community understand by having these kind of forums, having these conversations with you and with your parents and with other citizens, that what happens in the school is integral to what happens in the rest of the city. that if there are problems going on in the school, if you have students who are or discipline problems or disrespectful, it's not the school's fault. It's something going on at home that's affecting that student. But the schools can do something about it, but only with the community help. So I want, because I've had people stop me while I was going out gathering signatures or passing out my information, who would say, you know, I'd ask them if they were voting on election day and told them I was running for the school board. And they say, well, I don't have kids in school. You know, the inference was that, well, I don't really need to know what goes on in the schools. And that's completely wrong. And I know that you all know that because you're citizens of this community. You'll be voting soon, some of you, November 6th. We need to get that conversation going with the rest of the community and let them know that the schools are really at the heart of the community, that even if you don't have your children in school, we all have children in school. And I look forward to carrying on the conversation with you and your parents and the rest of the citizens even after November 6th. Thank you.
My name is Lynette Meinig, and I have two kids in the school system, one at Buford and one here at CHS. And I'm watching the same thing that happened to me in high school, particularly happened to my daughter. And she's coming home with reams and reams of homework, and she's hating school. My son does too. And I just, it's frustrating to me. I guess I'm a little bit of a renegade. I don't understand why we're so geared to SOLs. I think school should be exciting. I think we should all look forward to going to school. And I couldn't wait to get out. I wanted to dance. I was a professional dancer for many, many years. And then when I got too old, I became a professional artist. And I've had a store on Elliewood on the corner with my husband. I had a business that I traveled all over the United States with selling my wearable art. And I know that school doesn't serve creative souls as well as it could. And I know that is so paramount this day and age. I've had businesses. I'm an entrepreneur. So I'm really passionate about tweaking the system, getting it so that y'all are excited about coming to school. That's about what I have to say. I have some ideas how we could make school centered around more life skills, business, financing, how the students can come up with financing. I know the CHS band is kind of a school within a school. They finance, they come up with lots of finance. We make lots of brownies. So I think there's lots of different avenues to explore to see what else is there. How do we get the teachers so passionate about what they're teaching so that the students really get jazzed about whatever they're learning? Thanks.
All right, thank you. All right, you're up for the first question.
So would you.
Sure, I'll just raise my hand and time's up. That's fine.
Do you want me to repeat the question?
Yes.
Okay. So, what do you think can be done about the gap between the SOL results at the different elementary schools?
Between the elementary, or you're talking about at the elementary school level?
Yeah, the different elementary schools here in Charlottesville, like Johnson.
I guess I get to go next, right? Unless you want to. I get the softball question first. If you don't mind.
Oh.
No, that's fine. You can stay there. Okay. I just want to get up here so you all can hear me. Can you hear me all right, everybody? Okay.
Yeah.
This is a very complex problem, obviously. There's no immediate short-term solution. If there were, people would have pushed a couple buttons and done that already. it's a long-term thing. It requires a lot of work, not only in the academic side of things, but also in the so-called soft skills, like discipline, self-discipline, and taking responsibility and things like that. And there are courses at the elementary school, I believe, they're starting things like that, or it may not be until Walker, where they're starting to work on those kinds of things. I think putting good teachers where the need is most is very important. We tend to put the best teachers with the best students because they've sort of earned it. But we probably ought to take a look at doing the reverse and taking a look at maybe putting the best teachers with the students who need it the most. A longer term solution is preschool, pre-preschool, the 3 and 4 year olds. There's a 16 to 1 ratio in terms of investment. Every dollar invested returns you $16 if you start them early on because of lack of because they don't have to go on unemployment and they are employed. So I can't get into that, but it's pretty high.
I think Grant has it right. You got to get the kids earlier. What's happening at the elementary school that I see among my friends who have kids in elementary school are the kids who are having problems in school, learning, and then of course having problems with the SOLs and not really doing well in the SOLs, is if you are not read to before you ever get to kindergarten, I mean, I don't know if y'all, how many of you would remember being read to as a 2-year-old, as a 3-year-old, as a 4-year-old. We read to our 2 girls from the time they were in my tummy. We were reading. Reading is key. Why? When you get to school, if you can't read, how do you look at the textbooks? How do you study? And when you're that little and you're having trouble reading and you can't get to the textbooks, you get embarrassed. You don't want your friends to know you can't read. So we gotta get them earlier. We gotta get the kids whose parents are working 2 or 3 jobs, so they can't be at home when they get home to do homework. And we just gotta get them earlier, and his hand is up.
I'd just like to a little bit disagree with some of the comments that have been made, because we, as a family, were given the choice to go to different schools in the mid-90s, and we chose to go to Johnson Elementary School, a Southside school, and we were in the Burley Moran district. I must say that some of the very best teachers that I have ever encountered were in Johnson Elementary School. Unequivocally. So there are lots of different dynamics going on that we need to look at. It's not only the quality of the teacher. So having said that, we need to look at the full community dynamic. I'd also like to say that what I've learned in my walks and talks across the community is that a school like Johnson, for example, is actually showing a lot of improvement in their SOL test scores. In fact, the same sort of demographic group, the kids that are in the disadvantaged group, which is mainly in Johnson, they're scoring better than the kids that are in that same demographic at St. Venable. So my thing is, let's learn from each other as a school system. Let's not compete as so much as let's begin dialogue with all the principals in a very concerted way, and I believe that's going on to some extent. But I'd like to also.
I'm sorry, Ms. Galvin. It's been a bit over a minute. Sorry, I don't mean to be rude, but I know a minute's short. But we have lots of questions. So you want to have a.
Lizelle's comment about reading to her children before they were born reminds me of a favorite saying that I've heard. I know here in Charlottesville we're supposed to quote Thomas Jefferson, but I'm going to quote that other great thinker, Groucho Marx, who said that. Outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend, and inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. Really? Is that killed? Think about it. Let's give kudos to the current school board. In fact, we are making progress. We have met AYP this year. We are closing the gap, and let's also be candid. There always will be an achievement gap. There always will be high-achieving students. There will be underachieving students. Let us not take the resources away from the students who are doing well in school and thriving in school just to bring up the children who are having problems. And I'm done already? Forget opening the joke.
Well, I think we need community outreach. I think with those kids that don't have at home, we can get mentoring systems. We can do all sorts of things. I think every child can thrive, and I think every child can be successful, and I think every child deserves to be happy and to feel good, particularly when they go to school. I know Colette is a big advocate of foreign language immersion in the early schools because it's fun. My kid comes home from school and says, we're studying where they speak French. He wants to learn how to speak French. So how do you teach a language to a child? You just speak that language, and they pick it up like that. And I think we just need to reach out and be for those kids that don't have it at home, and we can do that.
Ms. Blatt?
It is a complex situation. When I was at Clark was considered one of the most challenging elementary schools in the city, and I raised the bar of expectations for my students. They came in, the group that I worked with, barely able to write a paragraph, and I said, by the end of the year, you're going to write 1 and 2 pages. They were writing 3 and 4 pages, analyzing a book for its themes. They didn't think they could. I knew they could, and I pushed them. I gave them a curriculum that was rich and vibrant, and they responded to it. They appreciated it. I did not teach the test. I was confident that they could succeed, and they did. 11 of those 13 got advanced proficient on the SOL of my fourth graders, and they enjoyed it. We did diagramming. We did foreign language. We did research. They were emailing a Zimbabwean botanist, and these were fourth graders. And so if they have a rich, vibrant curriculum, they're going to be engaged. They're going to be invested. Kids who have the same road routine get very disengaged. Behavior issues creep up. Chairs start throwing in those miraculously. There's my minute. So vibrant curriculum for the elementary years.
Thank you. Eric, you want to let which student know whoever's up next on the sign-in sheet?
Will, ma'am.
Just wondering if any of you actually thought it was possible to have 100% of the students at CHS pass their SOLs.
I'd like to think that we could reach 100% passing of the SOL, but the SOLs have their own problems. You've probably heard it all. There are cultural issues built into standardized exams that create problems for folks who are either of African American, Hispanic, possibly Asian. So are we ever going to get 100% passing rates of the SOL? I don't think we will the way the test is written now. I really don't. I think if the test is restructured, we may. But again, as Sean says, there will always be the achieving students, and we're always going to have children who unfortunately are not achieving. So are we going to ever get 100%? The sad answer, I think, is no. Should we stop striving to get 100? Of course not.
I'm going to try to change the direction of the discussion a little bit away from using SOLs as the sole measure of our value as a system. I really firmly believe that is destroying our system and destroying a lot of what's good about the teaching profession. So please, I would like to set the record straight. The SOLs, in my mind, and increasingly across the country, as a standardized test, should be a diagnostic tool that helps us understand where there's some stress points, where we need to focus. But to say that that's the sole measure of a child, sole measure of a teacher, sole measure of a school is very misleading. So let us move towards more of a portfolio, both the individual and of the school. As a division, let's think of a portfolio of school types that we could look at it for high school models. So I'm just saying that the SOLs are extremely limiting identifier of success in any way, shape, or form. Thank you.
I'm going to have a hard time following that up. Will, thank you for asking the question. Clearly, SOLs are important to you, and they're important to parents of students in class. I agree that the original idea of the SOL was to create a way of benchmarking the schools and seeing who's doing the best. And the original idea, I think, has merit. But the way it's been applied, where if you're a school that students aren't reaching the benchmarks, that you take the resources away, that just doesn't make any sense. And this school board is going to be in place when George Bush leaves the White House and the next president comes in. And I think hopefully that's going to be the opportunity to start a new national conversation to restructure the SOLs and turn them back into what they were originally designed to be when Senator Edward Kennedy was the first person to propose them. Stay tuned.
I am diabolically opposed to the SOLs totally. I think they're a waste of time. They're teaching kids stupid pet tricks, and I'm sorry, I'm very strong-minded about that. I think we need to serve the total child, and then you can have 100% success when you can really hear what a child is crying out for, and disciplinary, low achievement, anything is in the negative place is crying out for help or for support or for something, and we need to learn how to listen in a way that is constructive.
Well, I think we have to be careful with the SOLs. I think it started out in one way as an assessment tool to look back and gauge progress. Nothing is wrong with looking back at something. You do it all the time. You fix your hair, you look back at it. You plant a garden, you look back at it. But when it comes in the way of determining what kind of diploma you're going to get, one test on one day, you know, you might have had a disagreement the night before. You might have had whatever come up. To have one day say, this is who you are, is not fair. That does not exist for us as adults in the real world. We're given many chances and things like that. And that and the roadblocks that are put in place, the doors are closed because of performance on the SOLs. And at the elementary level, I've seen the kids already say in second, third grade that they plan to drop out by ninth or 10th grade. Mm-hmm. You know, a third grader say, the only thing I'm looking forward to in third grade is the SOL. Nothing about learning a new instrument, a foreign language. And so it's really taken education in a very scary direction. It needs modification in some regards.
I agree that the SOLs as a sole criterion for any kind of decision, I think, is a little off. I think we need a conglomeration of tests. The problem is trying to get a mixture of tests and also have a standard across the states to make sure that we're doing what we're trying to do with the standards of learning. I think the question really goes again to the achievement gap, or as Rosa Atkins talks about, the achievement gaps. It's a distance between what you're doing and what you can do, and I think our goal should be trying to get everybody to pass some kind of SOL, maybe with some variations along with it, but more importantly, try to close the achievement gaps that all students have, because we're not, when I was a student, I worked hard, but I sure didn't work up to my potential. And I was always good at taking tests. It's just the rest of life I've had a little problem. But taking tests was easy for me, relatively. Thank you.
Will, do you know who's next? Is it your hand? All right, thanks. And you can just note who the next student is and let them know.
Okay, I'm reading a question for someone else. His name's Aliyah Deesh. He wanted to know, and I personally do too, what are you doing to make the schools more environmentally friendly? What would your plans for those?
Okay, environmentally friendly. Of course, there's a physical dimension to that, as well as, I guess I would say, a cultural dimension. And the physical dimension is the physical plant. I've been struck, again, in many of my walks across the city, looking at the different elementary schools, for example, and Greenbrier is something that strikes me very vividly. It has a very verdant green space, lots of windows around the green space, just feeding into the classrooms as it radiates around the green space. Skylights, letting in a lot of natural light. And I think that that is the environmental quality that humans need. Okay, now let's, how can we look at these buildings and say, you know, how can we make the buildings more friendly to the environment around them? There's a lot of asphalt around here, a lot of really dead roofs up on top. Now, I can't even begin to start saying that we're going to talk about a green building program when I know that we're going to have budget issues coming up. But as we go along and looking at the capital improvements program, let's start bringing in those kinds of issues. When I talk about culturally, okay, what is the process for recycling? What is the process for, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, it's very brief. I do apologize. Thank you.
I almost wish I could give time to Kathy. She's the architect of the bunch and the perfect person to get this question first. So I'm not going to talk about architecture. I'm going to talk about what things we can do now. And, you know, Charlottesville and this area in Virginia is a leader in the new bi-local movement. And I think that's something we definitely need to bring into the schools and bring into the cafeterias. Why? You know, use companies that bring in food from, you know, on trucks from who knows where, when we have a wealth of wonderful food just growing in the land around us. So let's start the movement here. You know what? Don't wait for the school board. This is something that you should be doing now. You should be coming to us and saying, here's what you ought to be doing. Let's be working with local farmers. Let's go to the produce market. Let's bring in fresh Virginia vegetables and fruits and have them here to eat and make everyone healthy, and I'm sorry, but shut down the vending machines. That's my answer.
Well, I think I'd first ask the students, because I don't go here. I don't know what would be environmentally friendly for, does anybody have a suggestion? Not one suggestion? Well, go ahead. What would one thing be that would make it more enjoyable to be here?
I don't know if necessarily more enjoyable, but there's the recycling program here at the school is actually not very efficient. We don't have a very efficient recycling program. We have a lot of wasted energy use.
Well,
there's a lot of issues with that.
You know, there's first, wonderful point. How do we recycle? How do we get a program started? How do we get a student parent committee or something going that way? I mean, I think we need to ask the students what they need, what they want, and then work that out. I mean, that's just the democratic process, isn't it?
I think to get anybody involved in a program that requires group effort, they have to be aware of what the different parameters are. The Charlottesville Greater Community has a great recycling program in place, bringing that experience and that information here to the schools, but also getting the kids invested in this issue, that a lot of outside-in policies can work, but if it really comes from the inside out, where the kids feel that they are a part of it, then you have the best success with that. So when you're in the restrooms, how often do you leave the water running? How many paper towels do you take? The custodial work resourceful. I have all my children clean up their classroom so that the custodian can then use his resources or her resources in a more effective way. Are they cleaning up your own trash, so to speak, around the school? So you have to take ownership of the environment as well, rather than look to somebody else to do something for you as well. So it can start from grassroots program here at the different levels. And I know the city as well is doing a system-wide recycling program, and it's getting off the ground.
I agree. I think empowering you all, empowering staff members, I think that makes a lot of sense. Maybe having a committee on the environment from the students and with the staff too. I know that Mr. Henderson and started a program of recycling. I think that's underway. I think that's a good thing. I think this is the first year you've had recycling, I believe, and that's an excellent start. Hey, do more. Do things like turn off the lights when you don't need them. But you have to take, and as Kathy Galvin says, who's the architect and would know best, there are long-term solutions that you have to take a look at. There's an article in the paper about putting green roofs on. Well, yeah, that's fine as long as you can, the structure will stand them, but if they won't, you get 4,000 tons of dirt and grass down on you. That's not going to be real helpful. So long-term solutions and short-term solutions, and empower you all to think of things to do. I think that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Like Sean, I grew up in California, and when my husband and I moved here in 1990, I got called all sorts of communist, lefty, pinko, liberal, left-wing, you name it. I'm not really, and I discovered that living in Charlottesville for 17 years. But if you ask my husband what makes a Charlottesville, what makes a Democrat in Virginia, someone who believes in recycling. You ask, well, what makes a Charlottesville Democrat? Someone who believes in curbside recycling. That's how my husband defined it. Recycling is key. I mean, when Mr. Henderson made the report to the school board that the recycling program was going to start this year, my first reaction was, this is the first time that there's going to be a recycling program, but that's a step in the right direction. More bins is probably what's going to be the next step, so that there's more available wherever you are at the school. Fluorescent lights. You know, again, it's capital expense. It comes back to the budget. But when you start looking at environmentally friendly, you've got to look at energy efficient, turning off the lights, replacing the fluorescent lights. It always brings you back to the question, where are we going to get the money to do it? And as a school board member, that's one of the things we'd be looking at. Where are we going to get the money to do it?
All right. Thanks, Annie. Want to announce for student specs?
Folks, I'm sorry I have to leave early. I'm going to the Barack Obama
meeting tonight. Barack Obama's called her.
Sorry.
Yes.
Thank you so much for this event. Good luck.
Thank you.
Your senior year.
My question is, what is the process of hiring the administration at CHS, and like, how would you decide who is qualified? Because I know some students definitely would have questions on some of the
when you say administration, you talk about
I'm talking about
office
like the office, like principal, vice principal. Not necessarily the teachers, but just kind of like who's running the school.
Would you be willing to state your name?
David Woodside.
And could you repeat the question again? Because I got the first part fully. You said something about students wanting input on process.
What is the process of hiring the administration at Charlottesville, and how would you decide who is qualified? And I just mentioned how, like, I know some of the students don't agree with some of the people who have been hired as the head of the staff.
That's you first.
Yeah.
Glad I got the architecture.
That's a tough question. You know, you have a full-time administrative staff. You have a superintendent and her staff, and they now have a new HR person. And the school board is responsible for hiring the superintendent. But when the superintendent is in place, she's really going to guide the rest of the hires. And you know, for all of us, this is a less than part-time gig. So. As you know, because you were in school then, we went through a few superintendents the past few years, and I think Ms. Atkins now is just terrific, and she's doing a great job. And I think the community and the school board has invested a lot of trust in her, and in turn, I think she's paying back that trust with good decisions. But if you have questions about some of these decisions, if you have administrators that you think aren't doing their job, I do hope that you feel free to come to us and talk about it. Darn it, my minute's up.
Well, I know there was a faux pas with the Greenbrier principal being not hired this year, and I think something fell in a crack there. Now, that's human. how do we deal with that in a positive way? I think it's all come out okay. It is something to be vigilant about, something to review people's histories as well as their resumes. And for me, how I've lived my life is I really am learning more and more to trust my intuition. If anything comes in my head that has a question mark, I want to know more. And I think the board did have to review credentials, at least. And I don't know the final decision of that sort of thing is. But we also, I don't know, I think maybe students should have some sort of say, at least a voice heard. Thanks.
I can actually speak directly to that because I was involved in the hiring of Faye Giglio for the HR director. The process was, which was your specific question, an ad was made, resumes were received, they were culled by a committee, and then an interview team consisting of parents like me, teachers, and others, and staff members, reviewed all the candidates, invited the top candidates to come in for an interview. We then recommended two or three candidates to the superintendent, who picked the one that she could work best with, and I think that's a great process. The principalship, four principalships are up this year, and Mrs. Atkins instituted the process of very similar interview team, and then she brought each of the candidates, the top candidates, to appear before teacher, staff, and anybody else that wanted to come, and parents, like at Greenbrier, they could come and hear the candidates. And what happened at Greenbrier, none of the candidates really worked. One other quick point, I like the idea of getting feedback on a regular basis, on an anonymous basis, from teachers and staff. We recommended that last year from the Discipline Task Force, and I think it makes sense.
I don't know that I can add to the process. I mean, Grant pretty much covered how that process works. And the school board, really, the only hire we do is the superintendent, and I know that sounds like a punt, but that is our hiring position, the one position. And then we hold the superintendent accountable system-wide. I think it's a valid idea that there should be a student committee. At law school at William & Mary, we went through several different deans at our law school. And each time we did a dean search, there was always a student committee interview team. We got to interview the top five candidates for deans. We didn't have a final decision. Our vote was taken into account, but we certainly didn't have the hiring power, but our voices were heard.
Actually, it's my understanding that the board is responsible for approving all hires. So it is a very important position we have. And yes, the superintendent does make recommendations to the board. We don't manage everything, but we provide the leadership in making the decisions about what the direction of the division should be. So I want to go back and say that the question of what your site level management is all about is going to be something that's related to how the central office views the relationship of the schools and instructional leadership and then to the central office. So there really is a connection with central office in how all the decisions are made at the site level. Now, the high school is an interesting phenomenon because the students are nearing adulthood. And I have been a PTO president at Johnson. I've been various other kinds of offices throughout the schools. And there were always parent groups that were involved with the hiring process and the interview process. I do think that at the high school level, that you're of an age where you should be part of that interview process. Now, that I'm not sure what the policy is at this point, but that would make absolute sense.
Thanks. And who's next, David?
Josh. What's up? My question is, how do you plan to appropriate funds to where it's not only just like students going towards books and whatnot, but also for the teachers so they can coexist together? It's how do you plan to appropriate funds to where teachers and students both benefit instead of just like having it more towards one or the other?
Take your time.
I'm trying to understand the question.
How do you find balance between student teachers and funding? Is that something?
See,
I don't know. It's a balancing act. It is. I mean, I think it takes great negotiation and learning how to balance stuff. I mean, I do think high school kids, and I even think even lower down, could have a committee to powwow with. It is an issue. I think we need to, again, hear our students more. And hear our teachers more. And I understand that our teachers do have their hands in that SOL pot more than anything.
Of course, the purpose of the school system is to educate the students, and so the students, in a sense, are the ultimate customers. And as I said before, sorry about these answers. You know, we have to truncate them. We can only sort of flip out half answers to your questions. We can't really get into depth, obviously, because of the time. But teachers are, I think, the most important, as I said before. And I think what they do in terms of helping develop the curriculum, which they do, and also delivering the curriculum, I think that's the most important thing. I think we can get other resources from the business community. I think we got to try to ask them to do, not to do so much that's non-teaching. Students, as Mrs. Atkins said the other day, teachers keep getting stuff added on and added on and added on. I'd like to get some outside funding for maybe some awards, some more recognition, some more involvement of the students in the process, more connection between the teachers, more involvement of the teachers with the process, and more connection between the teachers and the board, more direct feedback to the board from both teachers and students.
The primary mission of the school is to educate you guys. And of course, in order to educate you guys, we need great teachers. So you're right. That is a big, tough balancing act you need to find, because money, unfortunately, doesn't grow out of trees, and we can't just start pulling it. We do have private businesses who can help. We get them roped in. We do have grants that we can write for, so that projects that teachers want to work with you all can be funded. So there's different ways to appropriate the funds, but you also always have to keep in mind that teachers and students have to coexist. I mean, that's the key part of your question, because without students, teachers don't have anyone to teach. Without teachers, students aren't going to learn. So yeah, we do have to get creative about finding money to get you guys programs you want to learn from and to get your teachers paid so that they don't get burnt out.
I'm going to look at this a little bit differently, that let's see how we can find in-kind payment. How can we get other ways of making the quality of life better for both teachers and students? A big, big issue, a big, big burden on community is the affordable housing. Housing, along with health and insurance, are two big, big burdens on the average citizen. I have an awful lot of experience in affordable housing, both in the design and the development of the housing. I've already met with Dave Norris about the various programs in place in the city. I've advocated very strongly that this board, a member of this board, should sit on the housing task force, and that it should be a regional effort. There's a lot more resource in the county, but the county also has the same issues as we do. They're very, very strapped for everyone's house. So that's one way to make the money stretch. The other way is to look at very strategically about where we go after foundation money. And if you look at preschool programs, for example, it's a very discernible kind of program that you can get foundations to target. So just be strategic about how we get our grant money for our folks.
You heard me mention earlier how, during high school, after my sophomore year, there were budget cuts, and it just devastated the programs in the school. And I don't want to see that happen here. One of my campaign proposals is to tear a sheet from UVA and start a capital campaign program here, similar to what they've got at the university. You know, they started that a few years ago. They said, we're going to raise $1 billion. And when they raised $1 billion, quickly, they said, wait, we meant $3 billion. And they're well on their way to that goal. Now, I'm not saying we can get $3 billion in a school,
But I'm saying we can model a program here similar to that. The more money that we can bring in from private foundations, businesses, wealthy individuals who are willing to contribute to the school, who care about your welfare, the more we can free up general funds for other things. Colette, who has left us, is fond of pointing out that there is no permanent grant writer for the district. I think that's a position that that we could see funded, and we can work with the rest of the community to find ways to bring more funding in here to help reach that balance.
Thank you. Did you see whose name was next?
Yeah, Jane Madiba.
I'm Jane Madimo, and I'm asking a question on the behalf of Julia Casey and Ted Lichtenberger. This kind of goes on with what Paul you were talking about, but are you planning on increasing teachers' salaries? If so, by how much and by what means?
Well, so what means, by what means is always the problem. That's always the problem. I'd like to take a look at, and there's some controversy about this, but I'd like to take a look at some sort of merit kind of pay in addition to some kind of bonuses, some kind of awards. I've spent 8 years of my life doing foundation work, raising money from foundations, and also doing corporate fundraising. I'd like to do what we can to supplement the teacher's salaries with maybe some awards, as I mentioned earlier, and some kind of merit pay. The other thing I'd like to take a look at is, as I mentioned before, maybe doing something more with managing costs. When I talk about continuous improvement and lean management, those principles, introducing those principles into the school system, what I'm talking about is every day trying to figure out what can we do better? How can we help teachers more? How can we save money more? And if we keep asking this question, it'll become sort of like the environment. You keep asking, how can you make things more environmentally friendly? It becomes a topic that's on everybody's mind, and now you start thinking of different ways. The more we do for teachers, or the more we save, the more we'll have available for the teachers.
How many of you guys have heard your parents, you guys live in the city, taxes going up, assessment going up, houses going up? You hear that every year. Our taxes go up every year. Cost of living goes up here, cost of living goes up in the county. So yes, teacher salaries, anybody's salaries really, even staff, have to keep pace. There's always the cost of living adjustment. So the question always comes, where do we get the money? Because it's a finite. We put a budget together, it's sent off to city council. City council says yay, nay, or whatever the amount is they give us. We always have to be aware that teacher salaries will always go up. And that's the teachers who are here working, because the cost of living goes up. Hiring new teachers, we have to be competitive in salaries that have to be balanced with how much it costs to live in this community. And it's not cheap to live in this community. So it always comes down to getting creative with the budget and how do we get teachers the salaries that they need to survive and yet don't take away resources from education.
Again, I'd just like to reiterate the idea of the housing issue and a couple of examples of what we could do to expand that possibility for teachers as well as the students is there's the land trust program that Bill Edgerton of the county has been investigating. It's similar to what's going on in Burlington, Vermont. That will lower land costs. That will make housing cheaper. There's also the workforce housing loan that CAR, the Charlottesville Albemarle Real Estate Association, has instituted already, low interest loans. I'm not sure how many teachers know about that. We need to get the benefits package really, really clear for the teachers. The other thing I want to bring up, and I just had a conversation with a school board member a couple days ago, and I was told that in some of our classrooms, we have such a low student-teacher ratio that it's almost not productive. It's like as low as 12 and 13 in some cases. I bring that up because we are looking at diminished enrollment in the division. What does that mean? Are we looking at some point having to bring up the issue of reconfiguring our schools, being more efficient with the plant? We have to look at things like that as well.
Your teachers aren't getting rich. I don't know if you've looked at teacher salaries, and I know you're some of you may be going out for workforce or looking at college and thinking about what you want to do for careers. teaching is not an area to go into if you want to make a lot of money. But if we can pay our teachers better, you're going to get better teachers, and we're going to keep them. We've had a very high turnover rate the past few years. So your question, Jason, earlier about trying to balance teacher salaries with what's going on in the school, I think that's an unfortunate way to look at it. Because frankly, you know the difference when you've seen good teachers and teachers who are looking for jobs elsewhere. If we can pay the teachers well, give them incentive to stay here, find them affordable housing, give them permanent health insurance, which they don't currently have, then we're going to attract and retain the best teachers, and I think that improves the overall quality of education across the schools.
I think that's a hard thing. I think teachers should be paid way more. But how do we do that? How do we increase budgets so we can do that? I know when I wanted to dance, I didn't care how much I got paid. I just had to dance because that's what I was passionate about. And I think that's what kind of teachers we need to look for. And then how do we compensate them? I think you can have a teacher love doing what they do, and money is an issue, unfortunately, in this world. And how do we grapple with that? It is always never-ending thing in my household. I think there's lots of ways students can make school like a business, a systemized business where cliffhanger.
What?
No. Nope.
Yeah, Emily, you're up. Okay.
Simon was pretty good. I'll go. Okay, my question is, my name's Emily Perrin. If you could change one thing about the Charlottesville community that would then positively impact the Charlottesville schools, what would you change?
I want our teachers to live in this community. I would love if I could, across the board, bring our assessments down, bring housing prices down. You're asking me about a wish list, right? That's what I would love to do, because we need our teachers in this community, because they're vested. If they live here, they're vested in our students, they're vested in our community, they're vested in the little kids that are going to be coming into the schools. The same thing goes with our cops. Our cops don't live here. I mean, I see cops day in, day out in court. They live in Fluvanna at the lake. They live in Albemarle County. Teachers, cops, firemen. God, wouldn't it be great if they lived in our community, if they could afford to live here? So, yeah, if I could change one thing, and I know the school board has nothing to do with that, that's what I'd like to do, is keep them here in our community.
Sorry, this is the wish list, right? I've been in Charlottesville since 1983. I've had kids in the system for 12 years. I've seen a lot of rancor in the division, and it revolves around the discussion of race. I would love for us as a community to be able to talk candidly about our issues and not let race prohibit us from being honest with each other, empathetic with each other, to the point where we can then work together. That is my ultimate wish.
Well, I'm going to give you two answers which I think are achievable and which I touched on earlier. One, get the university involved with the school system. You know, take the kind of pride that we have in that academic center that's up the street and shift it to the rest of the community. And that opens up the door for the other issue that I think is so important, and that is reminding the community that the schools are at the heart of the community. That, you know, if you don't have kids in school, or if you live away from the school, you might not think about it, But what happens here affects the community all the time. You remember this summer, if you were here, they were having problems with the near the downtown mall with the teenagers with the white t-shirts that were going around beating people. It went away when schools started again. Schools provide a sense of continuity and a place to go and stability in people's lives, whether they're good students or they're not so good students. And I think we need to extend that to the rest of the town.
I would love to see grades 6 through 12 have an open market. So they work with the business community. They get a bona fide business plan. Most businesses fail because they don't have a business plan. They work in groups of one-on-one or six or however we make the format. And they come up with a business and they start working, buy local, buy fresh, whether they want to create something or provide a service, and get the community to support this, find a space, get the city to provide a space for the kids, take one day in the school day a week to do this. Now, whether they do it once a month or once a week, you know, that's something to be worked out. You're learning finances, you're learning about public relations, you're learning communication, you're learning organization, you're learning how to systemize something so it works without you. Everybody gets their job, and there's lots more, but that's it.
What they said.
Plus, you know, I listen to the radio, NPR, just coming over here. The guy who's CEO of Merrill Lynch is getting the axe. But he's not going to hurt because he's getting about $160 million compensation package when he leaves. Talk about wrong. Talk about our priorities being met. I bet you don't make $160 million. Because I don't. We spend millions and millions and millions every day on Iraq. We spend millions and millions and millions on nuclear weapons we hope we'll never use. We spend rock stars get millions. Sports star gets millions. I don't think teachers get millions, and that's a bad priority. So if I could change one thing, it'd be give the school system as much money as they need, have great teachers all the way through, to do things to improve race relations, to have affordable housing. You said one thing, and I get to pick, right? That's my pick.
The benefit of being last.
Yeah. Is there anyone else that's on the sign-up list that has a question?
Yes.
This is a question that someone else asked. What would you do to reduce the high school dropout rate?
I believe so.
You did one other time?
No, I did the housing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the dropout rate. And there has been a lot of research on that. Again, I want to emphasize that the dropout rate is nationwide about 50%, and about 20% of those that do graduate find out that they're not even prepared. You just talk to the administrators at PBCC that they are also taking remediation classes. So to rectify that, there's been a study done financed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they talked about, they interviewed the students who dropped out. Again, very key thing to do. The kids were not engaged. They thought that it was boring. They didn't feel it was relevant to their lives. They felt that they had some one-on-one tutoring, one-on-one relationship with their teacher, they would have been better off. And that they wished they had listened to people that told them not to quit school. So all this points to me, again, and I mentioned it earlier on, looking at the high school model differently. How are we going to foster relationships so that it becomes something that the children, want to come to school and stay in?
My friend Kathy touched on a word that I think is very important here, and that's engagement. You know, I enjoyed school. I actually look forward to learning. I know I have a couple of children who do too, but there are many kids, you know, they come to school and they just don't feel it's relevant to their lives. And they have so many other interests, and we need to make them feel like a part of their own educational process. Now, I have one campaign suggestion, and I don't I'm not suggesting that this is going to solve the dropout problem, but I think you'll find it interesting. And that is, I propose to start a student judiciary council at CHS. So when somebody commits an infraction in school, they have the option of, instead of going to the administration and getting detention, they can go to a student-run board, a board of students that are elected by fellow students, and present their case before them. And the deal is that if they go that route, then whatever restitution they have to do, you know, they have to pay whatever restitution that the board hands down to them. By establishing that kind of dialogue early on and making students invested in their own school process and learning about personal responsibility and accountability and advocacy, I think is a step in the right direction to help students feel like that they're invested in their own education.
I think we need to make school more interesting, and particularly for the kids that don't like school. We just have to engage our kids so they're looking forward to it. Maybe diversify in subjects. I taught in the EDGE program at Walker, and I taught a rough bunch of ladies, and they really taught me how to shake my booty. And you know, it was fun, but it was, I think they enjoyed themselves, but how do we let the creative juices flow and then have the discipline to support the kids to stay in school?
Well, as usual, there's a short and long-term answer. The short-term answer, as I indicated before, I think is tied in a lot with having preschool and bringing 3- and 4-year-olds and starting them early. There's a great return on investment. We got some good programs going on in the school now. There's a Gear Up program at Buford. There's the, I've forgotten the name, where they have one-on-one tutoring conferences with the parents and the teachers and the students. It's obviously not one-on-one, but one-on-one. And I think those kinds of things are good. Trying to engage the kids. There's something at Walker, an after-school program involving my daughter helped build kennels for Mississippi, and got involved working with their hands, doing some of those kinds of things. Arts, some of the after-school programs. I think adding a high quality to the after-school programs may be a way to engage students. And one other thing that I would suggest, too, is trying to bring in the business community to talk about the skills that are needed in the workplace. As I indicated before, you all probably have to work for a living unless you're going to get that $160 million from Stanley O'Neill. And so therefore you need some skills and what's required in the workplace. And seeing that, I think, would engage students. Thank you.
When I started the campaign for running for school board, this is only the second time there's been a campaign to run, I had to watch what I said, because Barney has heard this word over and over come out of my mouth, Daily Progress guy, collaboration. That's what it's going to take. And in collaboration, in the line of work I do, that'll get you 5 to 20 in Sing Sing. So I have to be very careful where I use the word collaboration. By collaboration, I mean the school, the community, parents, because we do have kids who don't have the support at home that most of us here in this room probably do. And so who's going to be there to pick up the pieces to help this kid with homework? Well, you know who it's going to be? For some, it's going to be their church folks. For some, it's going to be their community centers. For some, it's going to be the lead parent on the block. But we've got to find someone, and we've got to collaborate so that we surround these kids so they don't drop out, because we don't want that dropout rate to keep climbing, and it is climbing.
So upon being elected as a school board member, what would be your first policy or series of policies to advocate? So in other words, what are the most important actions a school board member can take to produce not just policy changes, but like concrete, tangible, positive results?
Sean,
take it away. I completely lost track. First thing I would do is start taking school board meetings out of here. We could have our regularly scheduled meetings here maybe once a month. But this process, this campaign process, going out, meeting people, going to forums,
talking to parents, talking to students has been wonderful. And not everybody is willing to go up to a podium, stand in front of a boomerang-shaped table, and talk, especially when there's TV cameras here. So I would like us to bring the school board out into the community, out to the churches, out to the schools, out to the neighborhood centers, and start that conversation going over again so that people realize we're not just some, like, elected body, but we are parents and citizens just like you and just like everybody else, and we want to hear what your concerns are. I would also want to have all of the meetings recorded for podcast so that we can put them up on the school board site, and you can download them and listen to your iPod at your leisure.
First, I need to get on board with the school board and see how it works, the protocol of all. And I have been to school board meetings, but just to get on board and what I would do. I think I'd try to get this open market idea, market day, going. That's what I'd love to. But I fear that I would come up against all sorts of obstacles and resistance to that. How do I get through that? I don't know. Everyone I've spoken to about the open market have gotten great feedback. And someone approached me about GE providing funding for it. I think that would be a really great way to start changing the system so that kids could engage more in real life skills.
Thanks, Simon. I would, when we take office, whoever's elected takes office, it's January 1st, and the budget's already partway through the process. And it has to be approved early in the spring. So you gotta go before city council. I don't know whether you know, but the city council gives the school a lot of the money, and the state does too. My first focus would be on the budget. I gotta dig into the budget and figure out so I can understand it. Because what's very important is not that the school is not managing money well, but we need to make sure that the community believes that we are managing money well. What Sean talks about ties in with a great point for me, a very important point, communication, moving the school board out, more and more communication, telling people what's going on. We can't have enough of that. The second thing, the third, wherever I am on the process, I would also make it a standard. Remember, we are, each one of us will be one of seven people, so we have to have four other people, three other people agree with us. I would like to make a regular process of reporting what's going on in the school, how have we improved things, how have we saved money, how have we made things better for teachers at each board meeting. What gets measured gets done, and I think that would be very helpful. And trying to tie in with some programs, and Rotary's done a lot of programs around the country, tying in some of those that are helpful to schools would be important too.
The first thing after November 6th is I'm going to get a good night's rest. Just sleep. January 1st, 2008, if I were elected, one of my big issues in this campaign is the achievement gap. You guys touched on that. And so I guess one of my priorities would be to start digging in on what are we doing, what do we need to do differently, and what can we do better. And part of that is obviously the collaboration with the community, the collaboration with our nonprofits here in town. I mean, we have programs with MACA that are, I don't know if even you know, Project Discovery, Upward Bound, that help get first-generation kids to college. No one in their family's ever been to college. That's important to me, is to get that gap closed upward. And it's a moving target up here, because you guys who are doing really well keep going up, and we don't want to stop that. So that would be the first policy review. Really, what are we doing? What can we do better? What can we do more?
I would look at involving and eliciting teacher input immediately. I want to know what they're feeling, what they're thinking, what has the last 2-3 years been like. We're making AYP, but I've heard that the teachers are really breaking a lot of their backs. I really want to institute some process of consistently getting their feedback. And Colette has mentioned an ombudsman on the board. That might be a very good idea. I would also like to begin initiating a community dialogue on that dropout population and also the increased gang violence. There are models all over the country. Boston went through this with Operation Ceasefire, for example. We need to look at some of the writing and the findings of journalists like Colbert King. There's an amazing article in the paper on Saturday, about the dynamics going on with a lot of these kids. We don't have the homicide rates, but we don't need to go that far. We don't need to wait that long to get this community dialogue about what we need to do with the kids.
All right. I think we have time for one more question. Lion, do you have one?
All right.
Okay, I'm Lina Schneider, and this is a question from my dad, who is a book buddy, and my mom, who is a book buddy, and I was hoping to be a book buddy this year, but didn't work out with the CHS schedule, but it's about book buddies. Book buddies is a reading intervention program for first graders that has been used by the Charlottesville City Schools for about 15 years. Recently, the program seems to have lost the support of central administration because it is being used at the principal's option. Do you support the Book Buddies program? Or if you aren't familiar with it, would you pledge to gather information about the program before the board takes any action that would further weaken the program?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Book Buddy. My daughter had a Book Buddy, and she loved her Book Buddy. Her book buddy gave her a book and a little stuffed animal when she was done, and she loved it. I think in first grade, my daughter wasn't ready to read. She didn't really plug in till later. But she loved the program, and I think it was an awesome volunteer program. And I know it takes a lot of teacher input to get volunteer programs going. I think it's unfortunate that they're cutting back on it. I really think with some reworking, it could grow even.
Take the pledge. We have a good central staff. We have good people on staff, and I'd want to know what's happening with Book Buddies. My kids were at Greenbrier, and they were the reading part of the Book Buddies. So I think it sounds like an effective program. The first thing you have to do, I think, with every single program is find out, is it working, yes or no, pros and cons, and dig into it. And that's just, I mean, why are they cutting it? I'd like to know that. And they're probably cutting it for good reasons, or they're reducing it for good reasons. What are the reasons? And let's take a look at it. Let's balance them. Sounds great. Worked great for my kids. Worked great for the kids that I know of. Let's explore. So I would certainly take a pledge to dig into it. Obviously, I think you have to with every single program. So I pledge.
Would you take a pledge?
Would I take a pledge? I will take a pledge. Reading is key. I mean, it really is. I am familiar with the Book Buddies. I have several friends who were Book Buddies. And I was sad to see that it was being reduced, and I'd like to know why. And if the answer is a good to the why, then what can we do differently to restructure the Book Buddy so that, again, it's working and working well? So, yeah, I'd be happy to take the pledge because I think getting them at first grade and getting them earlier reading and loving to read is very important.
Yes. So I understand it, if I get my history straight, it might be like 3 or 4 superintendents ago, Superintendent McGeehan was the one that had the vision of the community, which was to form a community school university partnership. Book Buddies was a brilliant, brilliant manifestation of that. Very well-trained volunteers from our community, dedicated to the learning of an individual child. Didn't matter whether they had kids in the system. And it was designed by faculty from the Curry School. Perfect marriage of those three components. I very much want to know why that is no longer being fostered. And if it is being allowed to die out, what are we replacing it with that does that same sort of marriage between these three entities? So I definitely am very concerned about it. Many parents are concerned.
Yeah, I think the Book Buddy program is a shining example of some of the things that I was talking about earlier. I mean, bringing in this marriage, to use your word, between the schools and the university and the community, and get people involved, even those who don't have kids in school. And you know what? I almost don't care why it's being allowed to wither on the vine. I think, yes, we need to make that kind of commitment to it, because it's a perfect program. I was having breakfast with Kevin Lynch just a month ago, and he was going on and on about his book buddy and how when he leaves city council, he's looking forward to spending more time with him. So let's find out what happened, and let's open it up again and put the resources into it from the community and from the schools and get it going. Got my...